As promised, we have the great folks from Maple Hill Farms in Bloomfield on the program. One of the co-owners, Scott Miller. We also have Karen Grant, who's an integral part of Maple Hill Farms, and joining us from Green Pasture Meat, and they have a relationship with Maple Hill Farms, is Craig Bemis. And welcome all of you to Front and Center.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having us.
Let's start where you normally start, and that's at the beginning. So, Scott, I'll ask you, give us a little history of Maple Hill Farms.
Right. Well, thanks again for having us, Dan. And, Maple Hill Farms has been around really since 1928, started by our grandfather. We are the third generation right now. Then he had three sons and a daughter, Bill, Bob, and Rich, and they ran Maple Hill Farms and basically starting out house-to-house milk delivery. And then in the 60s, they pretty much sold the milk herd. And then my Uncle Rich and Uncle Bob pretty much started a vending operation. And that pretty much took off. And we still also do wholesale vending as well. So we do vending and wholesale and retail milk distribution.
So at one point, and this goes back to the day, back in the day, you had your own cows, and you milked the cows, and eventually that milk made it to somebody's home.
That's right. Yep, right on the doorstep. I still remember actually the hayloft and one of my friends climbing in there, falling down, Scott Lyman, and breaking his arm.
That was a while ago, yes.
Yeah, real good times.
Now, Karen, you and Scott are related, right?
Yes, we are. We're first cousins. Mm-hmm. My father was Rich. Scott's was Bill. And, we've been working together for quite a few years. Wouldn't want to tell how many years, but
what are some of your memories about the Maple Hill Farms?
Remember growing up near the farm. I do remember the cows, barely. I remember walking through the fields with the cow plops, looking out for them. Like Scott says, I remember the barn. I do remember Kelly was our driver. I remember Cal talking about her father delivering milk and her milkman. So Kelly was our milkman that would bring the milk into our house, into our refrigerator. So that was kind of cool. So I remember that. I remember when the vending started. I remember my mother counting money in our basement from the machines. So we all worked together as a family to form something that is still here with us today. So,
right. And another memory is there's three families, Bill, Bob, and Rich, and there's children in every family. And we'd be out playing in the fields or out in the woods, and all of a sudden you hear a bell. And it's like, that's your bell. Time to go home. You know, it's just great times. Matter of fact, I still have that bell at home. And once I'll ring it, it gives me shivers up the spine from the memories from that.
So. Now, we're going to jump around a little bit. We'll get back to the business. But I also want to bring Craig Bemis in talking about Green Pasture Meat. So, Craig, talk a bit about that.
So, to get started, my wife, Beth Burnham, is actually a cousin of the Millers, and I'm married to her. And we are from Vermont initially, but we do have a place in Connecticut. And we are producers of lamb, and we are in partnership with Green Pasture Meats to supply their products in Connecticut. So we brought the idea to Maple Hill Farms to see what they thought. They embraced it. It's a humanely raised product that people seem to like. So we've started a store starting on October 22nd, so it's new. So that's where we're taking off to.
How's it going?
It's going okay. The store is open on Saturday mornings from 9 to noon at Maple Hill Farms. We have the meat. We sell all the products that Maple Hill sells, milk, eggs, butter, sour cream, you know, anything like that. We're bringing down a lot of products from Vermont. We have mustards. We have maple syrup. We have honey now. Pancake mix, grilling sauces, you name it, and it's growing, you know, every week, Craig, our buyer, and we're all putting our, you know, thinking caps on, and we're getting more and more products in, so it's fun. I think we needed to diversify, you know, things are changing in the vending world, so we're just kind of going with the flow, looking towards the future, so.
Well, Scott, talk about how the company got into the vending business.
Well, That was back in 65. I was, 8 years old when that happened. So it was kind of above my time. But I do remember it was, there's these vending companies called Canteen and ARA. And my uncles had a relationship with the people of those. And those big companies, big full-line vendors that would have your snacks, soda, and, you know, coffee-type machines and food machines. And they would struggle to get dairy products to the machines in good shape and you know, without having the product go bad, and same with the ice cream. Well, our trucks are specialized where we have medium temp and also low temp for the ice cream and the dairy products. And, you know, we started filling their vending machines first and actually charging them. But then they got to the point where they didn't want to have anything to do with the machines. We took over those machines. And back in those days, the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, there was manufacturing everywhere in the state of Connecticut. You know, you had so many different places. But unfortunately, the lot has left the state, we used to have 45 employees. We're down to 23 now. But, you know, we're still strong in the vending side. Hopefully a lot of our customers are listening to us out there, because we really do appreciate, you know, your patron over the years.
Now, do you handle the entire state? What's your area?
Yeah, well, we pretty much all of Connecticut. We're very weak in, like, Northwestern. Well, there's not much out in Northwestern, not much out in Northeastern that we do anymore. But we're strong around the Hartford area, strong down 91 corridor, down the 84 corridor out in Waterbury. All right, and then we also go up to Massachusetts, Springfield, Holyoke. We even go up to Framingham. And one of our biggest customers, probably our biggest customers, is University of Massachusetts. We have, around 20, 25 milk machines and about the same amount of ice cream machines and all the various dorms up there. That, matter of fact, we were just awarded the contract again for the dairy. That's going to be putting us over 50 years on campus.
Wow.
Selling dairy products to University of Massachusetts.
I see your trucks all over. I would think logistically, I don't want to say it's a nightmare, but it's certainly got to be a challenge to make sure everything runs and is coordinated, right?
Oh, it's a piece of cake.
Who keeps on top of that?
Probably my brother would be more in charge of that. He's really good as far as, scheduling things. With my advanced age, I'm starting to get forgetful. So but at least I blame it on that. So.
But then, of course, you've got to maintain the vehicles. That in itself has got to be a challenge.
Well, that's another one of our key employees comes in. Rick Miller, another cousin, Karen's brother, who Rick is extremely talented. And, you know, some of our trucks are aging, although they're legal. Okay, and Rick is really good as far as keeping them up to par. And a real quick story: one of our guys, Dylan, had his Honda. He just blew his clutch in a couple weeks ago, and we're letting him use one of our vehicles. But Dylan goes, "I'm going to change this clutch myself." So he brought it into our garage. We're letting him use our garage, and he's been working on it like every weekend. And there's a couple bolts that he just couldn't get out, working hours and hours. And then Rick goes, "Let me give you a hand." Rick's underneath his vehicle for 2 minutes, had the bolts out.
Dylan worked him out.
So Rick's that type of guy where he's almost like, you bring it in broken, 5 minutes later, it's all set.
One of those guys who can fix anything.
Exactly. But don't throw him a baseball.
That's all right. He's more valuable being able to fix anything, that's for sure.
That's right.
What is it like being part? I'm going to ask all you this. In this day and age, when you are in a business that seems to be taken over by these conglomerates, what is it like being part of a family-owned business, particularly in the area of dairy? Karen, I'm going to ask you first.
I think we're all very proud to be a part of our family business, and it makes us strive harder to keep this business going. And again, you know, we're trying to think out of the box and still do what we do well. Besides the vending, we do deliver wholesale to convalescent homes, schools. We have the Avon schools, Windsor schools, Granby, East Heartland, Region 10, Canton. So, you know, we do well with the school deliveries. We like that. Like I said, we deliver to convenience stores now, so that's picking up a lot of our business. So that's a little diversifying right there by doing that. So we're just trying to go with the flow and do what we have to do.
There's some local school systems that they don't use us because there's this EastCon, which is a big bidding for the state of Connecticut. So if you're part of EastCon, there's one dairy supplier. And sometimes they come from a distance. And it's not unusual for us to get a phone call, especially after a holiday, going, "We have no milk. Can you help us out?" And we're happy to help them out to get the milk in the school so the kids have them. So, as almost we wait for those phone calls after holiday or a snowstorm.
But in general, you have to deal with the bidding process when it comes to these businesses, right?
Yes.
Sure do. Yeah, and that's on my brother's side, brother Bill. Yeah. And he does a great job. And we just cross our fingers. And one thing that we do, stress, is the service that we can provide. We're very, very reactive. You know, if we goof up or if they goof up, we're still going to bring the milk out to you. So where a lot of these other companies, they sorry, but we're not going to be there till next week. Well, we don't do that.
And another thing we pride ourselves on is that we answer the phone. You don't have to go through a push one for this or two for that. We're there, and we react. So,
I love that. Yeah. I mean, there is nothing more annoying than when you call and it's push one, push two, push three. I can go on and on.
Yep.
The thing that amazed me with Maple Hill Farm is they actually call all their customers and take their orders on a weekly basis, on a daily basis.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, five days a week we're calling. In fact, that's what Craig's wife, Beth, does, and she's very good at it. They love Beth. So we all work together as a family, what we are. So,
Craig, talk a bit more about Green Pasture Meats, particularly as we see these big conglomerates, and you know what's going on in that field. How do you stay competitive?
So the nice part about partnering with Maple Hill Farm with this product is I'm working with about 40 local producers in Vermont, which, quite frankly, are my neighbors. That's just on the meat side. You know, then we have the honeys, the maple syrups. These are all people that I grew up with. And where I'm from in Vermont, you know, everybody's more self-sustainable. They raise their own products, and, you know, jobs have gone away. So more and more people are trying to diversify their farms and looking for ways to get these outlets out. There seems to be a great following of people that want good food, good product. So we stay competitive by offering a high quality product. All of our product is, you know, hand selected. I actually go to the farms and look at the animals and work with the producers. Look at the carcasses and go back to the producer and explain to them what they need to do, excuse me, for a feed regimen. But just bring a quality product to the market. So we, you know, it is not going to be your feedlot beef, if you will. It's going to be a higher quality beef, no antibiotics, no hormones. So that's what we're doing. We're not going to be, you know, the everyday, you know, product that just comes to the door. It's going to be a quality product.
When you cook meat that doesn't have the antibiotics or the hormones, et cetera, do you have to cook it a different way, or do you prepare it the same way?
The one thing I will say, you know, Beth and I donated a bunch of turkeys this year. We raised turkeys, too, and fresh-grown product cooks a little faster. So turkeys take less time to cook. Fresh turkeys take less time to cook than a store-bought turkey, if you will. Certainly, depending on the cuts of the meat you get or how the meat is produced, like grass-fed beef is going to have less fat content, so it's going to cook differently than something with fat in it. But by and large, it is the same temperatures, the same cooking process as any other product.
I told you, by the way, I'm going to drop by and pick up that meatloaf mix. That caught my eye when I went on your website yesterday. and for those who visit the Maple Hill Farms website, the meat that they see on the website are meats from Green Pasture, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, this is really exciting. Now, did it take long to reach the decision about diversifying, Karen? I mean, I would imagine that there had to be some conversation on it.
Well, we've been working with Craig for Green Pasture Meats since before Father's Day. We wanted to get this to go off. We had a big open house event, like a tasting event, on October 1st, I believe. But we had wanted to do that Father's Day weekend, which it would have been nice to have all this available for grilling season. And the open house went very well, and we introduced a lot of our friends and family to this. And then, you know, we're just trying to get the word out. This is going to help a lot, hopefully. And just trying to go out on our website. We have signs out front in front of our business and on Simsbury Road and Burr Road. So we're trying.
Go ahead, Craig.
I think it's going extremely well. You know, one of the reasons we came into Maple Hill Farm and me and Beth proposed this to him is in Vermont, there's a small population. There's quite a few producers, and it was becoming more difficult to to get that product out in the market. So Beth and I approached Maple Hill. Beth had been working there a while. They embraced it. We started this venture, like Karen said. So now I went back to Green Pasture Meats. They're all into this. So we are the distributor retail place for Green Pasture Meats for the whole state of Connecticut, Maple Hill Farms is. We're working with some people on the West Coast right now, in California and whatnot, that are interested in our lamb. So it's just, it is something that's, you know, just starting to take off. Green Pasture Meats is literally 6 years old. It started six years ago in Vermont. So.
Now, that's exciting, though. I mean, it really is. And people are becoming more health conscious, too. So it would seem that you're right with the times when it comes to this particular product, correct?
I believe so, yes. You know, there's definitely a big drawing for it in Vermont in particular. It's been hard to try to get the word out in Connecticut, so things like this are definitely great for us. You know, we're offering a select amount of product right now at Maple Hill Farm. I think we have 28 or 29 offerings, but we are doing special orders. We are doing bulk products as well. We've had people calling in looking for already for the Easter season with lamb and
wow.
stuff. So we're starting to get some excitement, I think, in the area, and we look forward to that.
I mean, Scott, you were telling us before we went on the air, you had one customer who actually came back after buying some meat during the snowstorm the other day to buy some more.
That's right. Yeah, and we're wondering, like, uh-oh, what did we do wrong? But he just wanted more meat for the recipe that he was preparing. Correct.
Yeah, that's terrific. The milk, where do you get your milk from?
Well, our main supplier is Gaeta Siebert, all right, out of New Britain, and which is now owned by Dairy Farmers of America. One of our big suppliers is also Hood out of Massachusetts. Then you got Burn Dairy out of New York. And we get quite a bit of product from Mountain Dairy, which is out of Mansfield, Connecticut, out by Stores. And that's where we get a lot of all of our 10-ounce and our pints of milk. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting farm. It goes really directly from the barn to the bottling plant. Mm-hmm. And we always get the milk with a nice 18-day code on it. And this is product that goes in our vending machines. So it's nice and fresh, very good. Probably the best chocolate milk in the state of Connecticut.
Really?
Matter of fact, I have one to sample out there for you, so you have to try that.
So you don't bottle milk?
No, our production stopped in 1997. The regulations just got to be too much. And we stopped that, and we actually started buying from Seals, his dairy back then. But we're always shopping because we're trying to make a profit, which is challenging.
Sure.
So, and then I got to tell you, back was it 2007, right, where we had the fire?
2004.
Plus the 3 years. But anyways, I got a phone call around 1 o'clock in the morning. All right, and it was a snowy day, and it's my brother. He goes, "Get down here! Maple Hills Farms is on fire!"
Wow.
And it's like, oh my, get down there, and they had Burr Road closed, and the cops let me through. And I get down there, and Maple Hill is nothing but a pile of ruins.
Oh, my goodness.
And five or six of our trucks, which were parked next to the building, also went up.
I think I remember that now.
It was terrible. Yeah. And actually, if it wasn't for the Gaeta family, Maple Hill wouldn't have survived because we had no trucks to peddle milk in. Mm. And they let us borrow some trailers. We were working out of trailers for like a year while we rebuilt. Insurance was great. They worked with us, and we're actually able to rebuild. So it's kind of incredible in story, but when I saw that, I thought we're done. I really thought we were done.
It's very sad.
And Karen, it wasn't for Karen and Rick, just pulling through and getting through this, and our employees at the time.
Yeah, we didn't miss a day. We delivered the next day.
That's a phenomenal story.
Yeah.
What time of year was it when the
fire? January 27th.
January 27th, 2004.
Correct.
Yeah, and it was an electrical fire. It was an old building. The building was there since 28. Yeah.
But we have another building on location, a barn that the cows used to be in, that we set up our offices in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We kept it going.
And we literally set up in the cow barn. It wasn't a cow barn because that's where we actually worked on the vending machines at the time. But now, luckily, Karen backed up everything, all the information, so we didn't lose any of that. But to get up and going, it's just and people really stepped up and helped us out. For that, we're very, very grateful.
Do you find yourself in a situation like that, reaching down within and doing things that you can't imagine ever doing as far as handling a crisis like that? I mean, let's face it, that's a crisis.
It's Totally, yeah.
You really don't know until it comes upon you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when I think about it again, boy, I don't know if we could do that again. But until it actually happens to you, you know, and then, but like I say, it's all the people, all the employees that really stepped up and made it happen. And friends, you know, friends that came in and helped us rebuild. Mm-hmm. You know, just the logistics of it was incredible. You know, again, like that guy at Dairy loaning us trucks until we could resupply our trucks, you know, so, yeah.
Even the fire department, they took a shot at it to see if there was keys in any of the trucks, and there was. You know, they're right. Not supposed to leave them there, but right. They were. Yeah. They, a couple of the firemen, thank you, saved a couple of our trucks.
Really?
So, you know, just knowing everybody in town, we all grew up together, you know, we're still there, we still all work together. Mm-hmm. So it was people helping us clean up, going through the rubble. It was very disheartening, but it, you know, we did it.
So what did you learn from that experience?
As Scott said, we do back up every day. That's very important.
And make sure your insurance is paid up.
And take your backups off site, which we do. So.
Well, you know, you hear people say that, by the way. The techies say that you've got to back up your stuff and make sure, and you can in this day and age, everything is portable. You also have the cloud, but make sure you take it off site. And there are some people who say, it's never going to happen to my business, God forbid. You saw what happened in Berlin today with the old train station catching fire. Mm. You never know when this can happen, right?
Nope. So we have backup that we take off-site. We work with Tab Computers right now, mm-hmm. too, so they have backup, you know, with them. So, you know, we learned to be more careful than we were, but I think we did well.
The trucks are out in the parking lot now, not backed up to the building.
Yeah, you're right. That building is gone. It's a different parking system.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, good observation.
We're going to take a break, but don't go away because we have a lot more to talk about. Our guests from Maple Hill Farms. We're talking with the great folks from Maple Hill Farms, Scott Miller, one of the co-owners, Karen Grant, who is a cousin with Scott and is an integral part of the business. And also the newest aspect of the business is selling meat from Green Pasture Meat, and Craig Bemis is representing Green Pasture Meat, and of course his wife is also part of the family. And as we mentioned before, you've got to diversify in this day and age, so Maple Hill Farms obviously had to come up with a plan to diversify, and they decided to be able to sell this meat that is 100% antibiotic and growth hormone free. Now, can you buy that only at a certain time during the week, Craig, or when can you go to Maple Hill Farms and buy the meat?
So currently now we started small. We're only open on Saturdays from 9 to noon. We have got a good following of people coming so far. I think last week was a bad example because of the snowstorm, but I think we had about 40 people through the week before in 3 hours. So it is becoming popular, and we're looking after the first of the year to expand the hours on Saturday to maybe all day Saturday, make it more convenient for people to come in. We are not going to be open the next two Saturdays right. because of the holidays, which is unfortunate, but we're all going to spend time with our families and start back up on the 7th. You know, as time goes on and we add more products and the farm store, the Maple Hill Farm Store, because that's really what the name of it is, with Green Pasture Meats, as time goes on, we'll keep evaluating monthly to see how we expand hours and potentially retail space.
I mean, that's one of the things about owning and operating a business. People on the outside might think, well, that's pretty neat. And it may be neat, but it's a lot of work, right? I mean, it's just 24/7, isn't it?
It is a lot of work. It is 24/7, but you don't have the bureaucracy of stockholders. You can make decisions fast. You know, you can change pricing at the, you know, turn of a dime if you have to. Decisions are made to satisfy customer service, and it's done quickly with the Maple Hill folks. So there's big advantages to small, local, customer service oriented people.
Do you go back to Vermont a lot? Are you on the road frequently?
Interestingly enough, I do have a full-time job. Which is not this. This is part-time for me. This is a brainchild that Beth and I had to do this. We've been selling meat in Vermont and New Hampshire for quite a while privately. So we have two homes, one in Vermont, one in Connecticut. I travel back and forth weekly. So I'm usually in Connecticut 3 to 4 days a week, and an alternate 3 to 4 days a week I'm in Vermont. Typically, Beth and I will both be at the farm store on Saturdays, or Karen, Bill, or Scott. So when you come in, you're going to see who you're listening to today. So, yeah, I travel back and forth every week.
So we're talking about a commitment here. It's a lot of time.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you must love it.
Absolutely love it. You know, I didn't grow up on a farm. My wife did. You know, she's obviously related to the Millers. They had a large dairy farm in Vermont, well-known. Her father was probably second to none on as far as cattle and winning shows.
Wow.
So she's got a lot of history. We've got a gentleman's farm in Vermont. We have 20 acres. We raise lambs and chickens, laying hens and turkeys. And I actually am partnered with my cousin in New York with a beef herd. That herd was in Vermont until November of this year when we got out of a lease. But we've always been involved in agriculture, and it's a big part of growing up in Vermont. So this is just one way to stay connected without having to do the chores twice a day. So.
Did you learn by going to school? Did you learn through experience? How did you acquire this knowledge?
Everything I've done is... I don't want to say self-taught, but obviously I grew up in a farming community. Both of my grandfathers were farmers, you know, years ago. They both raised families of 4 and 5 kids on as little as 20 cows, so each. So, you know, I was around that a lot as a kid growing up. I worked on a farm when I was a kid growing up for neighbors. My father did exactly what Beth and I are doing. My mother and father, they raised animals for themselves. So I learned a lot from my dad and my mom. I was in a beef partnership business with a vet locally in New Haven for the last 10 years until he retired. So I learned a lot from that end of it, too, being working with a vet. So,
what is your main job?
My main job, I've been doing it for 33 years, is I'm the operations manager for Vermont in New Hampshire for a furniture company, okay, an office furniture company, and I'm also responsible for the flooring, architectural walls, sound masking, and those products for office interiors through a company called Red Thread, which is located throughout New England. We're in Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts, and Connecticut.
And you have the time to do this?
I do.
I don't know how.
I do.
This is amazing. It really is. Scott, are you doing what you want to do? In other words, obviously, this being a family business, but that doesn't necessarily mean that a family member has to be part of the business. Why did you choose to remain part of the business?
Well, started working at Maple Hill at age 15, loading the trucks, and just sort of just grew right into it. You know, it's just like... back then, you sort of just worked for your family. So, I went from graduating high school actually into the truck, delivering up UMass for quite a few years, doing various different routes, became a supervisor, training other employees. Back then, and I believe back in '85, actually became part owner of Maple Hill Farms, right? And then Bill and I have been owners ever since. And it's just, it's been a challenge. It's been fun. It really has. I mean, like, sometimes the challenges are almost a little bit overwhelming, but it really has been great, because you go to work and when you're small like that, it's more of a family.
Right.
It really is. You know, like the guys that we have repairing our vending machines, guys filling our vending machines, they're just incredible. And it's a job where you have to hustle. You just can't lollygag, because you might have 20 accounts you got to go to. And these people are looking for their milk or their ice cream, so you got to get there. And another key employee is Dave Anderson out of North Haven. I don't know how he does it, but he's responsible for such a large area, and he just does a great job. And people love him. He's just like he's actually become like a brother to me. Wow. Really has. So,
a brother and a part owner.
Yeah, brother,
yeah.
Part owner. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, it's great. And then some of the vending machines that we have are really interesting. Actually, some of them, I hate to say, but an ice cream vending machine, some of the ones that we have out there, like the 3-sucker machines, are like 30 years old.
Wow.
They don't make those anymore, but the newer ones are called Fast Corps, and they're 12-suction machines, and they're robotic. So it's It's a show in itself. And like I said, you know, you can sell different products in there, whether it be cookie sandwiches or strawberry shortcakes or fruit bars or
frozen foods in some of our machines.
Yeah, frozen foods. Wow. Yeah, like, you know, that's very popular up at University of Massachusetts. So, and our techs, you know, with the newer machines are higher tech, and they got to be trained, and a lot of them are self-taught. You know, because you get these machines, you get a manual, but you don't get much support from the factories. If you know, so coming out, because you know, machines are made from like the Midwest, and so you get them, you're kind of on your own, and you have a 5-year warranty, but they often break before that. But our guys are really good at figuring them out.
See, these are all the things that people might not even think of. They drive by or they go to Maple Hill Farms, not realizing that all of this is taking place behind the scenes. You walk in, you buy a product, and that's, in many cases, all you think about, not understanding what goes into it.
That's right. And if you own a vending machine, you're very rich. kidding. But actually, I was thinking about this the other day. Century Brass in Waterbury. Yeah. It used to be a big brass mill in Waterbury.
Right.
We had machines in there in its heyday. And I remember driving in there with a full-size milk truck, literally driving through the factory, parking not 20 feet by these machines. Machines are filthy because it's such a forging,
right,
loud, you know, area. You know, and then, like, I remember one time, somebody must have lost a quarter. So he literally drove a forklift right into the front of our machine. And it's almost like, you know, it's like, well, what happened? Yeah. I lost a quarter. Totally destroyed the machine. I think it ended up being going in the smelter.
Oh, my goodness. Karen, what about you? What motivated you to stay in the business?
Well, I did work somewhere else before starting at Maple Hill. In high school, I worked at Stop and Shop. And then I worked at Travelers for a year, and I did not like it. I always wanted to come into the business. There was really nothing for me at the time, but my dad was still alive then, and he got me into the company. I started at the bottom and worked my way up, too, in the office. But, you know, and it became our life. It's who we are. It's what we do. So, and I don't have any inclination to go anywhere else, not at this point in my life. So,
sure.
You know, this is us.
But you have no regrets?
No, not at all.
And at 39, she's young enough where she can go somewhere else.
Thanks, Scott.
I'm going to ask each of you this question. Scott, we'll begin with you. Best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
You going to start with me?
Yes.
Boy, I'll tell you, you just got to stay at it and try different things. Really good. One thing that I've been very fortunate to is going to the NAMA shows, which is a North American Merchant Association, which is a vending machine show. And it's usually in Chicago or Las Vegas. And you go out there and you see the newest vending machines or newest items or newest products you can sell on them. And if I didn't go to the shows, we wouldn't have seen some of these machines that we're currently using now. So you really got to stay up on the technology. We're using credit card readers on our machines now because the younger generation really doesn't carry cash.
Isn't that amazing, by
the
way?
It really is. Yeah. So, and actually, even some of the older folks. So when you put a credit card reader on the machine, you do see the sales go up quite a bit.
You do.
Yeah, you really do. So
wow.
So just stay at it, you know, and try different things.
So you're talking about these vending machines with robotics.
Correct. Yep.
Is that the future, or is it going to even be beyond that with some of what you see?
Well, I don't know. Like, maybe with Amazon, they might be able to, like, drone you an ice cream. You know? But one never knows. But,
yeah.
Wow. It's been challenging, but it's been fun. Probably the biggest challenge is, like I say, is, like, you know, with a lot of these places move out of the state of Connecticut, there's nothing we can do about that when you lose your customer base.
So. Right. Karen, best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
Probably the same as Scott, keeping up with technology. And as I said before, backing up and just kind of going with the flow. We aren't always the quickest to do that, but we try.
Sure.
You know, we try our best at what we have. You know, we're not a wealthy company, but, you know, it's a struggle for us. But we make it, and we try to make the best of it. And as Scott said, too, we have a good, very good working family, we'll call them, our whole crew. They're a family, and they're all great people. And
you touched on something. I'll come back to it in a minute. But, Craig, I want to ask you, best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
Stick to your values. Be persistent. Don't give up. Make sure that you're listening to your customer. One of the reasons I think that I've been successful over the years is, even though I use technology, There's nothing like stopping in and seeing someone. There's nothing like a phone call. So just stay connected to your customers, listen to what they have to say, and make adjustments accordingly.
Now, Karen, you said something about business, and, you know, you work hard, you struggle, but you make it. I've talked to a lot of business owners who, you know, on the outside, people say, wow, they're really hauling in the money. But when you talk to a lot of these business owners, they say our profit margins are thin. I mean, that's the real world out there, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, people may think they're the vending machine money coming in, but there's a lot that goes out, you know, purchasing everything, the commissions that you might have to pay. You know, it's not a money making. You know, we're surviving, and we're all happy at what we do. We love our jobs. So, but we're not going to buy mansions at the beach or anything with it. So, but this is it.
Scott, I see you shaking your head. The profit margin isn't what people would think.
No,
right?
Matter of fact, in the vending industry, you're lucky if you get 5%.
Really?
Yeah, really. It's that slim. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you're paying that kind of money, there's just so many other costs that go involved just in getting that product there. From the time you buy it, taking it off the truck, getting it on the truck, delivering it, getting into the factory, you know, the office people, the owners, you know, the mechanics. It's just so much of the pie that, you know, gets diced up. Now, well, one thing is kind of interesting, new product that we're starting to distribute, which we've been talking to some of the strength coaches at these colleges, is Rock and Refuel. It's a great product. And we started distributing it to UConn. You know, recently through their football program, so that's nice. And it's, what an incredible building, the UConn
right.
football stadium. I don't know if you've been out there, but
yes,
you've seen it.
Yes,
it's like I was like dumbfounded. You know, and super nice people out at UConn, and they're really appreciative. I guess they had a distributor before that wasn't working out too well for them, and
they were too far away.
Yeah,
I believe
too far away, and they weren't getting the product on time. They're getting the product with short dates. And they're, you know, now with Maple Hill, where they get it weekly, they get it with good dates, they call in their order, they're actually talking to somebody, and we're getting some really nice feedback from that, which is really well. And we're trying to expand that as well, you know, different colleges in the area. You know, hopefully, like, you know, the University of Hartford and Springfield College would be right up our alley, you know, for delivering that. So
if they're listening, by the way.
Bingo.
By the way, you know, you mentioned UConn, you talk about history. That school began as an agricultural school, right?
In fact, our Uncle Bob went to college there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, talk a bit about the store. If I go into the store, what can I buy at the store?
Let's see. Besides the green pasture meats and all of our milk products, you know, the butter, the eggs, the sour cream, we have grilling sauces, we have mustards, we have honey, pancake mix. What am I missing? Craig?
We have maple syrup, right. Jams, jellies, apple toppings, pretzels, and everything that's being sold out of the store is manufactured in Vermont. So, you know, the apple topping actually is manufactured by Gormley, but it's who's a neighbor in New Haven, but the apples are coming from Champlain Orchards, which is in Shoreham. So everything is being made and co-packed in Vermont.
And Craig is always looking around for more products to bring in, which is, it's fun to market and to get everything out there. So we're looking at cheeses and...
Well, you know what's exciting about all of this is you're trying to be local, you're trying to be regional. And one of the reasons I bring this up, I read today, for example, 80% of all the garlic that comes to this country is from China. Who would have ever thought that 80% of all the garlic that is used in this country came from China?
Really?
And what I want is local, what I want is regional. I want to know, if possible, where my food came from.
Mm.
So we have a roasted garlic mustard. I can guarantee you that we're in the 20% range.
Well, the mustard and the pretzels, I'm there just, I devour pretzels. I'm there just to buy that.
The other thing that we do at the store that's been successful, and we're going to keep doing it, we do have, we are sending emails out. Customers come in, they can sign up, and we send them a weekly email saying what we have coming in for new products. But we have done some tasting events. We did a tasting event when we first started this on October 1st. We've done a couple small ones since where we actually will cook, you know, sweet Italian sausage. We'll have the ability to taste mustards. We're thinking about with our pancake mixes and maple syrup and sausages and bacon that maybe one of these days here pretty soon we're going to do a breakfast tasting At the store for the 3 hours. So people come in, they can come in and sample the product, taste the product, get a better idea of what we've got.
What are the store hours?
9 to noon on Saturdays right now. Like Craig said earlier, we might expand, you know, as business picks up, when business picks up. Mm-hmm. So
what concerns you about, particularly in the area of regulation, that might come down the pike that doesn't have a good effect on the business? Scott, I'll ask you first.
Well, there's so many aspects of it, whether it be the transportation of the trucks, you know, the rules on the trucks, or the products you can sell in schools, or, you know, the spending the calorie on the front of the vending machines of the products you sell. It's just very cumbersome to take care of all these ADA restrictions and also especially like some of these machines, you'd have to buy new, and a new vending machine could be up to $6,000, and boy, that could make you broke pretty quick. So, I've seen it. Like, we've had to do some things up at the University of Massachusetts, and it's just tough. You know, I just would like people, especially the government, be realistic as far as what is actually needed.
Well, this is fascinating to me because we hear on occasion that, I know New York City did it, and some others, other governments might do it, state governments, et cetera. You must put the calorie count on these foods. When you hear something like that, how does that affect your business?
Well, it's actually very difficult. Like, probably the simplest thing, if the producers could actually have it on the label themselves, because a lot of our machines are glass front, and if you start putting these stickers all over the place, you wouldn't be able to see the product in order to buy it. Certain soda machines, which we're not involved in, I see that they actually have it under labels. But we have 45 selection machines. We might have 20 different SKUs or more in the machine, and they'd be plastered. And I don't know if people would actually search for, what the item, what they're looking for, because we'd have to have a sheet, which we're working on, it's difficult.
It's a headache. It's a cost factor. It's man hours. It's all of that.
Exactly.
Right?
And then if you have another product, so it'd almost be like having an MSDS sheet at every location.
Right.
Machines are set up differently because certain locations buy more chocolate milk than low fat, and so it's challenging to say the least.
Wow.
Really is.
What's exciting in the future that you say, wow, this happens, it's really going to help our business?
Well, one thing is getting the contract for another 7 years up at the University of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And I was just up there yesterday, introduced Lewis to Carolyn. She's the new person in charge of the vending up there because Meredith has been up there for many years, retired. So I told Carolyn, since we got it for another 7 years, I'd actually like to scope out some other dorms and buildings for future locations. And she was very much on board with that. So that's going to be happening in a couple weeks. And just the kids up at University of Massachusetts drink their milk. It's incredible.
Really?
They really do. Matter of fact, I think we give our run for the money for the soda machines, which is great to see.
That is, what a great story that is.
It's very good.
Yeah, that really is.
Like the old Brad Davis days.
That's it. Brad Davis in the milk show.
I'm showing my age.
I just saw Brad Davis walk by.
Yeah.
With a glass of milk.
Uh-huh.
We were talking before, Karen, off mic, because we mentioned milk, and I told you how I'm lactose intolerant, but you can handle that.
We have it. We have lactate milk and skim and 1%, I believe, quarts. And then we have little 4 and 8 ounce cartons that we sell to the convalescent homes and the schools, that one of them is skim and one is whole milk. We also have lactate Dixie cups.
Really?
24 to a box, yep. So,
oh man,
I can see you'll be stopping.
Absolutely,
in.
You're absolutely right.
Look forward to it.
Yes, wow. Okay. What are your hopes for the new year? We'll start with you.
I hope that Maple Hill does well. I hope that our farm store takes off and does well, because I think it's exciting. It's fun. Like Scott said, the UMass milk contract, that was a nice thing to get. What do you think, Scott?
Well, one thing I got to give a plug is for my new granddaughter, Ava Rose.
Congratulations.
And my son, Jesse, getting engaged to Lauren, so that's very exciting.
Beautiful baby.
Yeah, beautiful baby. Yeah. Beautiful baby.
Congratulations.
Girl, so. I know I don't look like a grandfather.
You don't.
But, no. Maybe a great-great-grandfather.
Business-wise, what do you hope for? You said UMass contract, obviously.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, like, you know, I do see things, sales starting to pick up, people buying more milk, realizing that, you know, soda. And we sell all sorts of products, teas, waters, juices, and our vending machines also. So I see people gravitating more towards our machines because they're generally a little bit more healthier than like a soda machine. You know, tons of sugar in soda. Mm. So, and I just see it happening. And one thing that we also sell too is the ice cream people. You know, the ding dong people going around your neighborhoods ringing the bell, selling ice cream to the kids. We also supply them with ice cream, and it seems like we've been taking on more and more of those every year because we're very responsive to their needs.
What's your biggest selling ice cream in that area?
Oh, probably SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah. You're a grandfather. Well, and Craig, your hope for the new year?
Well, my hope for the new year is to continue to work with Maple Hill Farms, and you know, my vision is that this farm store, when it takes off, will allow us to get a retail space to where we're open more for the public to make it easier for people to come in. And long-term vision would be that it's 5-6 days a week. Come get it.
Wow. We are, if you can believe it, out of time.
No.
The hour went by quickly.
Yes.
So before we wrap up the program, Karen, anything else you would like to add?
I don't think so. I think this was fun. Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome.
I truly appreciate it. And thanks for Cal and Capri for suggesting us.
Sure.
So,
Craig.
I just want to thank you very much. This has been great. And thanks.
Well, you're welcome. And Scott?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for having us. And one plug. One thing we do in the summertime, if you have a community pool, we will be happy to install an ice cream machine, you know, during the summer for your pool. And also give you a piece of the action.
All right.
So,
very good.
And we also have ice cream push carts that we could rent out to you as well for any functions, whether it be a company picnic or a party or, you know, like something at DRC.
Oh, terrific. That's good to know. Maple Hill Farms, Bloomfield, Connecticut. Thank you all for being on Front and Center.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.